Acheson didn't even bother to show the document to President Truman. By then, Oppenheimer was fully aware of which way the winds were blowing. Edward Teller was winning. But if so, Oppie still hoped that the technical obstacles to designing a thermonuclear device would prove to be insurmountable. "Let Teller and Wheeler go ahead," he was reported to have said. "Let them fall on their faces." On January 29, 1950, he ran into Teller at a conference of the American Physical Society in New York and admitted that he thought Truman was going to reject his recommendation against the super. If so, Teller asked, would he return to Los Alamos to work on the super? "Certainly not," Oppie snapped. A day later, in Washington for a meeting of the GAC, he decided to drop in on a special meeting of the Joint Committee on Atomic Energy, called by Senator Brian McMahon to discuss the super. Oppenheimer knew McMahon was vigorously lobbying the president to approve a crash super program, and he knew his views would be unwelcome. But he turned up anyway, telling McMahon and the other legislators, "I thought it would be cowardly for me not to come up here and let you disagree and raise questions where you thought we had missed the point." His demeanor was one of polite resignation. Asked what would happen if the Russians got the super and the United States did not have it, he replied, "If the Russians have the weapon and we don't, we will be badly off. And if the Russians have the weapon and we do, we will still be badly off." The whole point, he explained, was that by going down this path ourselves, we are doing the one thing that will accelerate and ensure their superbomb development. When a congressman asked him if a war fought with hydrogen bombs would make the Earth unfit for human habitation, Oppie interjected, "Pestiferous, you mean?" Actually, he said he was more worried about mankind's moral survival. He explained his position with an air of utter reasonableness, and though no one present questioned his logic, he left knowing that he had not changed anyone's mind. The next day, January 31, 1950, Lilienthal, Acheson, and Defense Secretary Lewis Johnson walked across the street from the old State Department building to the White House for a meeting with the president on the super. Lilienthal was still ardently opposed to a crash program. Acheson privately agreed with many of Lilienthal's objections, but believed that domestic political factors would compel Truman to go forward with the crash program. The American people simply would not tolerate a policy of delaying nuclear research in so vital a manner. Johnson agreed, telling Lilienthal, "We must protect the president." It had come to that. The real issues related to national security had been rendered irrelevant by the simplifications imposed by domestic politics. They agreed, nonetheless, that Lilienthal would be allowed to make his case. Once they were in the Oval Office, however, Lilienthal had hardly begun his presentation when Truman cut him off to ask, "Can the Russians do it?" When everyone nodded, Truman said, "In that case, we have no choice. We'll go ahead." Lilienthal noted in his diary that Truman had clearly set on what he was going to do before we set foot inside the door. Some months earlier, Lilienthal had warned Truman that demagogues in Congress would attempt to force his hand on the super. "I don't blitz easily," Truman had said. Walking out of the White House, Lilienthal looked at his watch. The president, who couldn't be blitzed, had given him exactly 7 minutes. It was, Lilienthal noted, like saying no to a steamroller.